my song. Let's sing it. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Come on, it's gonna be freaking awesome. You know the words. It's gonna be freaking awesome. That's it, say. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Yeah.
Hey everybody, it's Jesse Blaze Snyder, the coolest geek alive. How are you doing out there? Are you good? I hope you're good. If you saw Indiana Jones, you might not be good because people don't seem to like it. Even though I'm suspecting that it's probably not as bad as everybody's making it out to be. I mean, it's directed by James Mangold. He's a really good director. It's got Indiana Jones in there. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I don't know. I thought she was kind of funny in the Solo, a Star Wars movie. But I heard so many things that were against the sort of my moral fibers about how you adapt a beloved property the right way for the audience. And I didn't want to put myself through it. And I think I'm probably going to eventually see it. And I will probably go, it's not that bad. But it doesn't matter. It's not that bad. It's that bad for the audience. The audience has dipped away. They are not here anymore. Holy shit. This movie has bombed. It's done worse than the Transformers Rise of the Beast film, which the Transformers Rise of the Beast film, I think they considered a success, but they spent a lot less money than Disney spent on this Indiana Jones movie. And this is just the beginning of a pile of really major mess ups that this company has been making. And I need to start the show really by just telling you how much I love Disney and how much this upsets me. You know, I'm going to make jokes about this and I'm going to be light about it, but I'm not happy. I would have bought a ton of stock ages ago as they bought all my favorite properties, the Muppets and Marvel. And I was like, yeah, and Pixar. Yeah, support all this great stuff. Disney is recognizing what I recognize of how valuable these things are. They are imploding on themselves creatively now. They're eating their own tail, remaking things. They've actually caught up to recent films. They're remaking Moana now. And like all of these things are such cash grabby kind of things because they're all just sequels and repetitions of IP. And you can do that and get away with it if you do it well and lovingly. And we're going to talk today about all the mistakes they're making across the board and how they've fumbled the ball with all of their IP and their own. They're like everything that they've bought, they've screwed up. And they're screwing up themselves. It's terrible. It's really, really terrible. But, you know, we're going to make light of it and try to entertain ourselves. So let's see. My headline for today, the slow death of Disney. 2023's financial losses to top $1 billion with Indy 5. $1 billion. This year, financial losses, $1 billion. It'll be like $1.2 billion. Lucasfilm dead, Pixar dead, The Muppets dead, Marvel Studios, Disney Animation, and Classic Disney are dying. How can Disney survive? By listening to their gosh darn fans. Here we are, decades later, since they started this path of buying up all the good ideas in Hollywood, and it's clear for any rational person to see, Disney's screwing up all of our goodwill. And the executives in charge are not careful, they're going to lose the whole thing. I mean, really, the whole thing is at risk here. There is not much juice left in this squeeze right now. We've arrived at apathy and perhaps a very quiet boycott. Me personally, I'm this close to canceling my Disney Plus subscription, and millions have already. I've been so disappointed by so many offerings made this past year. It's bothering me to continue supporting the company financially. And that's honestly why I chose to skip Indiana Jones 5 this weekend and see No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence instead. A movie I could recommend. All right, we're moving on. Sometimes I see comments on the internet from people who don't care very passionately about movies, about comics, about science fiction. And they're all like bitching at fans of the shit who don't like what's being put out to get over it. Oh, come on. Judge what? I wasn't that bad. Shut up. We need to hold the bar. You need to hold it up to a certain standard. And which is why I'm not feeling a lot of sympathy at the moment, because the bar is not being held. The whole reason why I started this show in the first place is because the story of how the entertainment is being made and how it's all shaking out has become more interesting than the stupid entertainment that's being made. And I can't believe that. I can't believe that just following the stupidity is more entertaining than the entertainment. It's terrible. We are championing these things because we know what they can be at their heights. The Lord of the Rings fans knew that that could be made into a film that would blow people's minds. And handled lovingly by Peter Jackson and company, it did exactly that. And now, Peter Jackson is a geek god, held alongside a J.R.R. Tolkien. And I know a lot of you are going, well, come on, Jesse, let's not be ridiculous. But you know what I mean. We're holding him right up there. And we acknowledge, well, there's J.R.R. Tolkien. But, like, he's above the rest simply by loving the thing. He went, hey, this is a thing and I love it. And, hey, what if we just do it the way everybody already loves it? Oh, what a novel idea. You guys are just stupid. I just don't get it. I don't get it. When you don't do it, it's right there. Approved. We like it. Hey, you like it? We all like it. We like it. You like it? I like it. All right. Great. We like it. Woohoo! Forward. And then they start going, well, maybe. What are you doing? it's like Mugatu and Zuleta. Am I taking crazy pills? It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I don't know why I have to have this conversation. It's just so stupid. The biggest and greatest film franchise of all time is, you know, The Lord of the Rings. And granted, you guys can go with Star Wars and whatnot, but I think Lord of the Rings is like just a pivotal artist replicating something that had become sort of biblical because it was in print for so long and beloved for so long, and doing it justice, doing it the way people wanted to see it done, you know? And they made some adjustments here or there, but in general, just making a loving tribute to J.R.R. Tolkien. That is what cements it as something really just, I think, important for all time in terms of adaptation. And Star Wars is a little different too from like what I think of as well, because Star Wars is its own thing. Those first three movies, you know, that's George's vision. But Lord of the Rings was something that was taken from the books and had existed prior to being turned into a film. And I think that's kind of the thing that I'm talking about here. Making Star Wars was more like the Lord of the Rings books. Making the prequel trilogies is like making the films for The Lord of the Rings. That was the follow-up thing that we had to match the original's success. And we know how those things have turned out. So Lord of the Rings, though, I think is the pinnacle of that sort of adaptation. Not only did Lord of the Rings appeal to fans, it won the normies over completely. And I say this on my show all the time. We are just a microcosm of the human race. We're just the people who took the time to read the stuff. The popular kids and the jocks are going to like the stuff that we like just as much as we liked it. They just didn't take the time to read it. We did. But we're all humans and we're all having a human experience. And humans tend to like the same things. You know, we'll be like, yeah, no, this is really good. And we hand it around and we hand it up. We are not completely different audiences. The mainstream crowd and the nerd crowd are not different audiences. We're just the ones who are willing to work a little harder to get a little more information, to find out a little bit more about the thing, to dig into the subject. That's it. And anything that we are starting to bubble over, other people are going to bubble over too. And The Lord of the Rings, I think, really proved that as well, which is another reason why I love that as an example. Oh, and I wrote, changed hearts and minds. You know, there's a stigma associated with fantasy. There had always been, Lord of the Rings, flip that shit on its head. There would be no Game of Thrones if not for Lord of the Rings. And it was all because it lovingly actually did the thing. It wasn't Hollywood going, hey, we're gonna make people love this. You didn't have to make people love this. People already loved it. And that's the thing. People already love all these things. And when you start rearranging them, we're seeing what the diminishing returns are. We know that an Indiana Jones movie and a Flash movie done right could be and should be incredible. All the fans know that. It's not you know, superhero fatigue. These things could be done right. Although, at the same time, right now we have an instance of, we know these things aren't being done right already. We can see it in the trailers. Who's that Supergirl? I don't recognize her. Never seen her in a comic book. Why do I want to go see this movie? The member berries thing has become a meme. Hey, there's Michael Keaton, and he says, I'm Batman. And he says, let's get nuts. And everybody goes, oh, great. Obviously, people have turned their nose up. And, you know, I've talked about the Flash movie is really not so bad. A lot of people really like the Flash movie, just like I'm sure Indiana Jones probably isn't that bad. I mean, because that fourth one was really, really terrible. I don't know. It's hard to imagine anything could be worse than Indiana Jones 4. That was really, ugh. distracted by how terrible that movie was. When these films are not world-shakingly great, the fans are going to have something to say because we know what they should and could be. The people who make these comments have no such faith in these properties. They don't have faith in film as anything more than a divergence from the monotony of their lives. They don't know what they are saying. They don't know what we could have had because they only have a superficial idea about the things that we like. If they had any real respect for the source material and the things that we love, they would go check some of these books out themselves. They'd investigate. Oh, I hear it's really good. But they don't, because they've already judged that, oh, no, that's lame and childish and whatever else. So they've judged what we do as lame and childish, which is why they won't go and read the comics or go read that novel, a fantasy thing, or play D&D or whatever it is, right? So, oh, lame and childish. And then when we're like, hey, this isn't good, they're like, oh, you stop being lame and childish. Come on. That's what's going on. They already think it's not supposed to be that good. All the things that you like are lame and childish. And the people in Hollywood, they think that too. If you think that something that you're making is lame and childish, guess what? It's going to be lame and childish. And I do love and enjoy the Marvel Universe. I have a sense of humor. I really appreciate having a sense of humor. I wish the Marvel Universe had a little bit less of a sense of humor sometimes. It's taking these things seriously that gives them power. The more you make it a joke, and boy, the last phase of Marvel has really begun to make it all a joke. What does it mean? It loses its meaning when the Infinity Gems are in some geeky guy's office drawer in the Time Variance Authority building, and it's like that really messes with the sort of levels in your mind of what matters, and you successfully made some things matter, and then you keep walking back on all the ways that it matters by making a joke out of it. It's really a dangerous game. These people who try to tear us down, they have better things to do, like get laid or amass wealth and power, so that maybe they'll get laid then. People like me and you are focused on ideas. We're spending time and energy reading terrible things that you'll never have to suffer through in order to find the diamonds. So the point is, don't listen to these patronizing people telling you to calm down. They have no freaking clue what they could have. We essentially broke through the surface with The Lord of the Rings, you know, which I would say is the pinnacle of adaptation done right, handled seriously. Captain America isn't a joke. Captain America is a James Bond. Handled with more authority, these things are interesting. Thor is not a joke. He is a god. There are epic myths, cool stories to be told, and they're skipping over him to do soap opera kind of thing with him. And now they, you know, turned him into a complete joke. If they kept it hard and serious and just put him through some stuff, he's a Viking, man, you know, make him bleed. The more you make your character work to earn the thing, and this isn't me indicting any of it, but the more you do, the more you make your characters liked by the audience, because the audience is like, yeah, come on, you got to give it to him. You know, the idea really is to make them struggle enough that the audience says, please, please, God, please, I will leave this theater so upset if you don't give this character the thing that they want. I need to see them get the thing that they want, or I will be devastated. You know, that's where we need to bring them. And people just really fail at that a lot of the times, because I think they fall in love with their characters and they treat them too nicely. You have to establish, there's a buildup to so many of these things that takes place over time. If you don't follow the rules of that building narrative, it crumbles. I've said it on the first episode of my show, the fans are responsible for all of this. This empire, this entertainment empire, the modern age of Hollywood, we are responsible for everything that's here. We hold all the power. The 1-2 punch performance of The Flash and Indy 5 have proved that we hold all the power, for the worse for them. And the success of Super Mario Brothers movie, the Spider-Verse sequel, the Sonic the Hedgehog movie franchise, like, that proves the fans are there. The fans are cool. The fans are reasonable. It's Hollywood who is unreasonable. The corpse of what Disney was is beginning to rot. And I'm here to report to you what exactly that rot smells like. Valiant Renegade on YouTube has been making the news rounds with his calculations that the Walt Disney Company has lost nearly $900 million at the box office this year, and that does not even include what they're about to lose with Indy 5. However much it shakes out to be, Disney's updated loss total will surpass $1 billion. How does a company destroy the profitability of the most profitable brands on the planet? Let's break it down. Lucasfilm. So, Indiana Jones leaks. There are a number of YouTubers who have gotten into the investigative reporting game. Doomcock is one of them. I actually recently had the privilege of meeting the man. I really love Doomcock, and I'm going to go on his show in a couple weeks probably. I've consistently paid attention to Doomcock, and he's very clearly, honestly going about getting rumors and leaks and whatnot, and he's right at least half of the time. And Indiana Jones, Doomcock was right. He was right. And the story that you probably don't know was that this angry YouTuber, you know, and he's depicted on She-Hulk. It's really silly. Doomcock is very much like me, except he's just using this character to take a very bold stance and be sort of hyperbolic and crazy about the conversation. But he wants to save pop culture. He loves these myths that we have, and he doesn't want to see them destroyed. He wants to see them really lovingly taken care of. And he speaks about that all the time. He's very clearly a very sweet guy if you pay attention to the thing, despite, you know, what some quotes that somebody might pull off from his channel. But you know, he's a supervillain, and he's, you know, he's doing this over the top performance. It's really a very wonderful show. And he reported that basically they were going to kill Indiana Jones in the past and erase him from history and set up Phoebe Waller-Bridge to take over. And the fingerprints of that is all over the place. At the time, they came, and granted, I haven't seen the movie, I know, but I've paid attention to everybody who's seen the movie to get basically every plot detail to understand what was going on, just so I could talk about it without seeing it. And everybody says it's very, very clear where the moments happen. There's a moment at the end of the movie. Well, I don't want to spoil anything for you guys. Well, clearly nobody's seeing it, so I guess it doesn't matter. There's a moment at the end of the movie, go la la la, if you know, la la la, if you don't want to hear, where Indiana Jones wants to be like left in the past, just like leave me here kind of thing, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge knocks him out, like one punch knocks him out, which you never want to do that to your lead character. You guys are crazy. And this seems to be like where the edit was made. They came after Doomcock really hard. The director was put in charge, and hey, don't flame the director. He was, you know, Mangold, just don't listen to them. Tell them, no, I will not do that unless you give me lots of money. Like, they went out and they tried to cover this up by saying that there's no truth to it whatsoever, and then quietly tried to do some reshoots. And they really threw a lot of shade at Doomcock to take away his credibility. And then John Williams and then Harrison Ford both let the monkey, you know, out of the bag of they had done some work on the ending, as Harrison Ford had said. And John Williams did have to make some new music for things shot for the ending. And there's been rumors that have come out since that they had a appearance from you know, Short Round that was an alternate thing, but for some reason they didn't like that, so they pulled it out. I think that would have been a very smart move to do the appearance from Short Round. So that's the story of Doomcock, and I really believe, I'm a good judge of people's character, I really believe that he is a man of sweet character who's just been disappointed and by the state of things, and maybe he holds things to a higher standard than even I do, or whatever, but he really loves them, Doomcock, and I believe that he is getting information and does believe in the veracity of the things. I don't believe that he's messing with people. I don't believe that he's trying to be dishonest. I really believe that he's fundamentally just a geek like us who loves the thing. So don't be mad at Doomcock. He's just doing what people have done for years, doing the Hollywood thing. But the Hollywood press really doesn't like it when you start revealing their dirty secrets. And that's the big deal. You know, people like Valiant Renegade and WDW Pro, and people are paying attention to the numbers. Like, that's embarrassing for them when people are pulling up numbers like this, that they've lost $900 million this year. That is embarrassing. So, you know, when all this negative press for these YouTubers is not fair, because they are just doing what isn't being done by Hollywood journalists, because they're on the payroll, baby. And by that, I mean they're getting free tickets and free meals and getting treated right because they treat the companies right. It's a one hand washes the other kind of thing. It's very incestuous in Hollywood. You know, take it from me. So $295 million and $100 million marketing is believed the budget. Oh, no, actually, that's kind of the report. That's the reported budget, I guess, for Indiana Jones. And it's believed to be a lot higher than that. The first week gross is usually representative of somewhere between 30 to 50% of its overall box office haul. And geek culture films tend to be front loaded because us geeks come out on opening weekend to support it. So this weekend, Indy 5 made $152 million worldwide. If it's 50% of the box office, which is likely, we're looking at $304 million total, and that's less than the reported budget, and the actual budget is likely over $500 million with actual marketing and production costs combined. Even if this is only 30% of the total gross of the film, it'll still come in significantly under that bar. According to Valiant Renegade, Odin of Odin's Mighty Beard Review, $750 to $900 million is the break-even point for the film, and it seems poised to lose somewhere in the range of $300 million, according to a number of YouTube market analysts who I trust. That puts them to $1.2 billion in losses from their films this year. It's crazy. So why did this fall so hard? It's their budget and their approach. They're trying to replace the character. It's funny, Indiana Jones 4 failed because they were trying to replace Indiana Jones with Shia LaBeouf to some degree, and people really didn't like that. There was a lot of things we didn't like about the movie, but they rejected him as replacing Indiana Jones in that way. It's a tricky thing, replacing a beloved actor in a role. I think there's certain people who might be able to get away with it. I think under certain circumstances, when Harrison Ford passes away, at that point, then you're like, okay, we can recast him. I mean, it is tricky. It's not the easiest thing, as Steven Spielberg and George Lucas already learned. I was kind of surprised that they, I don't know, just surprised across the board at their approach to it. Well, maybe if we replace him with a woman this time, it'll be great. The biggest thing for this whole thing failing for me is a comparison to Rocky V. Hollywood should have learned from Rocky V what Sylvester Stallone clearly has learned, that your audience does not want to see their beloved hero brought down to his knees all of a sudden, arbitrarily, so you can make a dramatic movie. If you saw Rocky V, it's like, here we are, it's Rocky, and everybody's like so excited because the last time you see him, he's on the top of the world, and then it's just like, everything sucks. His child hates him. His wife is not happy with him either. Life is terrible. They've lost all their money. They've moved into a swamp. I don't even freaking remember because I had to scratch the damn movie out of my mind. And he trains this upcoming boxer and he has a street fight in an alley. It was just like, it's like Rocky the homeless man. Every Rocky fan was just like, what the hell? Who ordered this? Who ordered this? I didn't order this Rocky movie. And you guys should have known that we didn't order an Indiana Jones who was a broken old man. We don't want to find out that his kid died in Vietnam and they never patched things up. That's terrible. We don't want our hero to die upset, having lost a son. That's awful. Having broken up his marriage? We that was the one highlight of Rocky IV. I mean, not Rocky IV. Indiana Jones 4 was that he got the girl that we wanted him to have in the end. And they had a kid, and there was some hope for him to have a happy ending. It's like the only thing that was real. I mean, you know, I think there's a happy ending enough at the end of The Last Crusade. But there was like an additional buttoned on happy ending from that movie, which was nice. That's at least a positive thing that people don't mind. But this bit of let's tear this guy down and literally having him asking for just leave me here. Leave me here to die. That's what this movie's about. Indiana Jones is like a hopeful, uplifting adventure film. You're going to make some dark, brooding Indiana Jones film? I don't know. I mean, granted, it's not a dark, brooding Indiana Jones film, but like this, I can't. They won't come out of my mouth, so I'm just going to move on because I can't get the words. But I think you know what I'm saying. So now let's move on from Indiana Jones. How about Star Wars? We've turned the Star Wars universe into a TV show. There's no movies in sight. Dozens have been announced and canceled, and dozens more are waiting to be announced and canceled. Mando Season 3. Oh man, we were finally getting somewhere with Mando Season 1 and 2, and then executives mandated to undo sending Grogu off with Luke Skywalker, and I think Jon Favreau, like, broke inside because he killed himself off in the third season, and the third season is awful. And the best thing that they've put out, which is Andor, is its lowest rated show. I loved Andor. Andor was great. People should really watch Andor. It was awesome. Of course, I really like Rogue One as well. Obi-Wan, Boba Fett. I couldn't get through Obi-Wan. I just thought it was so stupid. Science fiction, when like they're not like it's not logic checked. There was just so many things that were just like, really? There's just a lot of things about all these. Boba Fett was so disappointing. Ugh. Ugh. What are we doing here? Star Wars, it's dead. This is dead. Indiana Jones, this is dead. Willow, I think they had to tax write it off. I know it got like removed from the service. I didn't follow the whole thing. I didn't want to watch that one because I really like Willow. And Willow without Mad Mardigan is, not Willow to me. So, I love Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer, you and your poor voice. I hope you get better. If you haven't watched that Val Kilmer documentary, it's pretty interesting. He's dealing with some severe health issues with his throat. And it's terrible. I really love him as an actor. All right, Lucasfilm, dead. I'm doing this trial of Star Wars on Chris Gore's channel on YouTube. I've been helping out doing like kind of characters. And, you know, they're putting Disney Star Wars on trial and they have declared it dead. But I think add to that list Willow, add to that list Indiana Jones. And now Pixar, dead, man. Pixar, hanging on with the promise of sequels to some of their classics. But this is the company that John Lasseter built and he isn't there anymore. Disney Animation has stolen all their tricks, and the company's turned into a direct-to-Disney Plus brand. Seemingly struggling even with sequels, the huge flop that was Lightyear. Elemental is at the box office now and will go down in history of their biggest flop to date. And it's still going to do better than The Flash. And Elemental, it beats out The Good Dinosaur, which was a big Pixar flop at the time. And, you know, Pixar fans like me should remember that being a bit of a letdown, despite the fact that my son used to watch it all the time. So I kind of grew to like it over time. There's a lot of crappy Disney movies that I've grown to like over the time just because whether my children have watched a lot or I have an affinity for it growing up with it. But Pixar was honestly my favorite film studio, period. I worked for them. I made comic books for them for Toy Story, and it was an honor to do so. And I had a lot of other pitches written for other stories that they'd written because I loved and respected everything that they made, and I was very happy to go and back them up. And everything that I wrote for that stuff was just a loving letter to people who loved the property. If you read my Toy Story comic books, you'll find them. They're just love letters to the franchise. Generally speaking, I get a lot of kudos from Toy Story fans because we did something that was loving. If you're being loving and respectful, people like it. It's really simple. It's not like I'm so talented. All I did was watch I had the movies on in the background over and over and over again. I just listened to them over and over. I'm listening to the movies, listening to the dialogue. Just getting it in my mind so that I could try to accurately reproduce it. Not so that Jesse could be so cool. You know, it's not about me. It's about the thing. I want to make the thing really cool. So everybody's like, yeah, ooh, these are all the things I love about it. Pixar Studios had Toy Story, had Monsters, Inc., Up, Finding Nemo, Inside Out, Ratatouille, The Incredibles. it was once the case that Pixar had not released a single stinker. A Bug's Life bombed at the box office, but has gone on to be a fan favorite. Good Dinosaur is arguably the first one. You know, Cars, people didn't like, but Cars was a very specific thing that I think John Lasseter really sort of meant to be a little infantile and innocent in a certain way. And it's hard for the adults to appreciate that the same way they appreciate the other Pixar films, and I understand that. But look at Cars' success. You know, it did really connect with children. It really did. And so I really think people don't give him enough credit for how brilliant Cars is. You know, it's made a lot of money, but it's on the back of kids like that. You know, anthropomorphizing the cars really speaks to them. It's like the same way Thomas the Tank Engine or whatever it is. Pixar, they've run it into the ground. It's a direct-to-video, direct-to-D+. I never thought I'd live to see the day. I'm so disappointed. I love Pixar. The Muppets, my favorite. My favorite, Jim Henson is my idol, the Muppets. They have struggled so hard to get it right with the Muppets. I know how to get it right with the Muppets because I love them so much, and I've actually tried to get in there as a writer. I almost got in there after 5 years of pursuing a meeting with Bill Beretta, who's the puppet captain. He does Pepe the King Prawn, Originator, and Bobo the Dancing Bear, two of my favorite characters. And he was Earl Sinclair on Dinosaur. He is an amazing Muppet performer. He's taken over a lot of the mainstream characters like Ralph the Dog and others. I finally got to sit down with Bill, and I, you know, gave him my insight, and he was really lit up, and he basically said he was going to try to get me in to the writing staff for the Muppets show that was put out a while ago, where Miss Piggy was aggrandized as having her own talk show. And what happened was the Modern Family showrunner guy got brought in, and he just brought in all of his writers that he worked with before, and a lot of these people probably don't have a particular passion for the Muppets. And this is a thing that happens a lot. You know, people want to work, so they'll take whatever job. So often, you're not getting people who really love and are passionate about the Muppets, because I could have told everybody that it was not a good idea to build a Muppet show around Miss Piggy's success. The reason why the Muppet Show are so endearing to us all is because they all have a passion that they're pursuing as fearlessly as they can, and they're failing more miserably than you and I ever will pursuing anything. And it makes us all feel better. Miss Piggy is a pig. Not just is she slovenly, meaning she's not taking care of herself. She's pig-headed. She's mean to people. She talks down to people. She is the epitome of an undeserving person, an ungrateful person. She's tries to solve all of her problems with violence, hi-ya, and arguments and anger. She's not a very good person. This doesn't mean we should dispose of her and mistreat her as nobody would dare. But it does mean that nobody is looking to see her rewarded and put to the top, like, oh my God, like, let's all go collectively throw up. Of all the people that deserve success, Miss Piggy? I mean, I guess that says something about the world, but that show wasn't saying that about the world. It was just a lame sitcom thing where they turn the Muppets into famous people, and that really robs them of their agency. The agency of the Muppets is that they're independent and they're scrappy and they're trying to prove themselves, but they're not very good. And that's why we like them. That's why it's funny. You're blowing it, Disney. You're blowing it. Muppets have a good Electric Mayhem show out right now. I've only been able to watch 2 episodes. I mean, it's like not so good that I've been ripped through the whole thing, but it's good. But I think it's too little too late. Marvel. Now, I won't say Marvel is dead. I will say Marvel is dying. And it really is. This Captain Marvel situation that we're about to go into, it has broken down the 2 Marvel shows. One Marvel show that's going on right now, Secret Invasion, and the movie, The Marvels, that's about to come out. This thing, it's not happening, man. Like, Marvels is going to bomb big. I wouldn't be surprised if Disney tried to prop it up, but I don't think they have the money to prop it up. So what then? What then when you can't afford to buy out some theaters and get some hype going or whatever it might be? Because those are some of the things that were rumored to have happened for the original Captain Marvel movie. The things most lamented from the biggest Marvel films of all time are all the Captain Marvel parts, unfortunately. A lot of this stems from the fact that they changed Captain Marvel's origin. And just from the beginning, just fans were like, well, this isn't really Captain Marvel, and like, so it's not authentic. And Captain Marvel wasn't the most popular character to begin with. And then Brie Larson did herself no favors, not really interviewing very well, we'll say, even though I like her as an actress. I think she's pretty good generally. But the Captain Marvel movie makes so many of the same sins of all these other films that are on this list, and I'm not even going to bother going through it all. But just to name a few of the crimes of dying Marvel, charge one, forcing the unnatural introduction of multiple members of the Young Avengers who don't even start out on that team, like Miss Marvel Kamala Khan, who'd be more in the new updated version of the Champions. She's like a later generation. America Chavez, who comes onto the team later. I don't know why these characters had to be introduced. Charge two, rushing the introduction of the largely untested, largely panned Marvel Now diverse replacement characters like Miss Marvel, Falcon Cap, American Chavez, Ironheart, before establishing pillars of the Marvel Universe like, I don't know, the Fantastic Four, Doctor Doom, the X-Men, Silver Surfer, Galactus, Blade, Ghost Rider, the West Coast Avengers, decades of Captain America stories, decades of Iron Man stories, decades of Thor stories. There is so much to adapt. Don't jump the gun. Add new characters. Whatever you need to do. Add a supporting character here. Don't change the thing that we like. Additive to the thing we like? All good. Try to make it good. Change thing we like? Nah. Nobody asked for that. Stop it.
Charge three.
Also ruining characters. Making them unrecognizable. Like MODOK, Ghost, Taskmaster, Namor. That's not Namor. If you read the Namor's a great character. That character is not Namor. I don't understand how they think they can just read. These characters have personalities and they matter because of how they interact with each other in the comic books. You got to get them right so that you get the character relationships right, because that's what we love. We love the dynamic of different characters. In comics publishing, characters on the shelves next to each other have to be decidedly different from one another. It's making them different that makes them sell. If they're identical, if Spider-Man and it's Spider-Man and it's Spider-Man, granted, you can sell multiple Spider-Man comics. But if your other characters are just Spider-Man ripoffs and everybody loves Spider-Man, that he's not going to sell. He has to stick out in the marketplace and be different than Spider-Man. So when you combine all these characters onto a team, you're combining characters who have been made very purposely different from one another in major ways. The nature of that relationship with having everybody have to be so dynamically different, it makes those team stories so interesting, and it makes the shared universe so interesting. And you're screwing it up. If Marvel, if you're listening, you have a template for 1,000 years worth of material, and you could use hindsight to improve on everything the fans appreciated less at the time. Lovingly honor and bring to life the stories we already told you we loved. I don't know where we go from here. They've got Deadpool coming up. That'll be a good one for them. But holy crap. In general, I think people have really tuned out. I definitely have. I'm not watching Secret Invasion. I'm good. I want to talk about wrestling and the audience, how the audience decides. You know, you try to push a wrestler. He's a good guy. The audience doesn't like him. Eventually, you try him as a bad guy. The audience likes him as a bad guy. Eventually, you can make him a good guy. But the Green Ranger from the Power Rangers, one of the reasons why he's so beloved is because he starts out as a bad guy. So he's being fought against and he's redeemed. You know, these are changes that take place. You know, you go through a process. If you do a reality show, if anybody out there ever does a reality show, I've done some reality shows, and it's really nerve-wracking because you don't know how people are going to make you look, and like you get screwed all the time. Don't be afraid to make mistakes on camera, because the producers always want to resolve the story. So you make a mistake and then they have you resolve it. You get to apologize, whatever it is. And that always makes you look better to the audience than you trying desperately to look perfect. Nobody likes perfect people, but if you just honestly make your mistakes and honestly allow whatever unfolds to unfold, it's much easier. Rest in peace, Jason David Frank. So you got to go with the audience. You have to let them shape the thing. When the audience feels as though they were part of, part of the masonry process of, you know, carving this sculpture, they take ownership in it. And with comics and the constant stream of letter columns and everything else, the audience of comic books who have been reading for a long time, we feel like we are part of the process. As the many writers and the many artists who have been trying to please the fans along the way have been a part of it, as well as the people who created it originally, like a Jack Kirby and a Stan Lee. There's just a lot of people who have been a part of this process, and that's why we all have feel ownership over it. Also, with wrestling, sometimes wrestlers are given bad gimmicks. And we go, all right, bring this wrestler back here. We need to give him a new gimmick. We need to give him a better gimmick. It's time to give your wrestlers the right gimmicks, the gimmicks that we love from the comic books. Go back to the source material. And once the audience embraces these things, then you push them. You put Captain Marvel in the movie, or you try to get her thing. If people like it, then you announce the sequel. You don't just like get in head over heels with these things before the audience has a chance to be a part of the process, because then we start to feel like you're not listening to us, which clearly you're not. So, that's Marvel. Marvel is dying. Disney Animation is dying. We got Strange World. My kid thought it was a Pixar movie, which demonstrates just the style thing. It bombed, whether we liked it or not. I kind of thought it was all right. Not great. Disney Animation in general is only having huge success with its sequels. I didn't even know Raya and the Last Dragon was an official Disney animated film. I went to go look it up before the show, and I was like, Raya and the Last Dragon? I'm like, oh, I didn't see that because I thought it was just like a... I thought it was like just like a kid's movie or something. Like I didn't ever see a trailer for it. Encanto did terrible at the box office because of many factors, but still didn't seem to set the world on fire interest-wise, despite the songs becoming pretty classic after the fact. I know my kids love them. The rest of Disney's main promoted output is their remakes of their animated classics, and the last three of those adaptations of Little Mermaid, Pinocchio, and Peter Pan have left people viscerally annoyed at all the unnecessary creative liberty being taken in the name of inclusivity. Again, add things in. There are plenty of ways to be inclusive that don't include just changing the thing. You know, how a thing looks matters. We talked about the little black girl who went, hey, that's not Ariel. Ariel's not black. Ariel's white, and she's got red hair. We like the things to look how we like, you know? You don't have to be a redhead to look at a redhead and go, oh, that's so pretty. Look at her light skin and her dark red hair. That's so beautiful. The same way a Hispanic person with a cream-colored skin and dark hair, you know, it's beautiful. There's all sorts of beautiful people. So when something is decided upon, we've decided, oh, this is beautiful. We like this. This is lovely. So you change it, and it doesn't matter that it's another version of beautiful. We liked the first one. No, we were like, yay, beautiful, perfect. Move on. In the name of inclusivity, go greenlight a movie about an African princess, please. There are tons of fairy tales from all around the world, and the only answer for you guys is to reinvent existing beloved characters and properties? Really? Lame. Lame sauce, Disney. You know, make something new, you artistically bereft corporate machine. If you want to remake things because you know they're already pre-audience approved, then do it. Just like we remember. You're doing no one any favors with the half measures, especially not yourself. All right, Bob Iger, I want to talk about here for a second because I guess I've gotten through all of the main companies within Disney. Granted, they've got like National Geographic and stuff, and I don't really necessarily know how they're doing with that stuff or whatnot. I haven't necessarily been enticed to watch much of anything except for a documentary about those kids who got stuck in that cave and they had to send the scuba divers. But that's the only thing I can remember watching from any of Disney Plus's things the whole time I've been doing this. I've just stuck to the franchises that I liked and checked out those shows. Now, Bob Iger, who's just recently come back he's the head of the Walt Disney Corporation, he's got political aspirations. And this is all his fault. All his fault. If this is how he has divided a half a dozen different fandoms, I hope we never learn to see how he might divide the country. Seriously. This guy has political aspirations? No. 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 You don't know how to please people. Are you out of your mind? You know how to politic. Clearly. Art and politicians can be politically slanted, let's just say. But it must treat all of its appreciators and constituents equally in all matters. You can't demonize any part of your audience. Art is meant to heal the heart and mind. Disney is supposed to be a meaningful company that makes meaningful films for all ages, that teaches us what being a good person looks like in most cases. But now, it's a judgmental and clearly slanted brand that's not even executing its heavy-handed political ideology-driven entertainment very well. No one likes to hear a Jehovah's Witness is at their door, or that their friend has kicked their old heroin addiction, but now they're a born-again Christian and they're coming for you with how they think you should live. No one likes to be preached at unless they personally choose the church. The audience has said, fool me a few dozen times, but I won't be fooled again, and I'm not coming back to the Church of Disney. And hear me here, this isn't about your personal stance on Disney, this is about the overall. The average person is fed up here. Fed up when a company or a person begins to judge swaths of the audience. The audience doesn't enjoy that, and they take on an adversarial role. This adversarialness, it stops the messages that you are trying to send from reaching the audience. If you make things and you're apologetic and sweet and whatever else, and hey, we'll try to get it right the next time, people will kind of just keep giving you as much rope as you want. But when you demonize the audience and call them sexist and racist and all these things because they're not enjoying what you're putting out, you just create an adversarial relationship with your own audience, who may just disappear one day to spite you for not listening to them, as we see here. They can try to walk back on these things now, but it's too late. We're going to be very selective, and it's going to take a while. It's going to take, you know, Deadpool 3 better be amazing. But even if Deadpool 3 is amazing, I don't think the audience is going to go, well, Deadpool 3 was good, so everything else is going to be great. I don't think so. We've got the Marvels coming up. It's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. We've got Pixar's Elio coming up. Looks cute, but I don't think anybody's going to be lining up to see it. The Pixar brand, the shine is off the rose. The Marvel brand, the shine is off the rose. Lucasfilm, what's the next thing coming? A second season of Andor, which I am excited about, but nobody watched the first season. We got a second attempt at the Haunted Mansion. The first attempt was not very good. I know I've heard from people who say they like that movie, but not very good. And I don't know if this one looks good. I don't know. I don't trust them. I don't trust them to do a good job. And I think that's the main thing. Fans no longer trust them to do a good job. So is anything going to change? What's going to happen? I mean, there's this ESG money, which is basically kind of like social engineering money. And it's terrible. It's the Jehovah's Witness thing. It's the pressing us in a direction. Art does show us how to behave well without it having to be crammed down our throats. It teaches us. So I don't know, you know, because to get money from the ESG thing, Disney is definitely cash poor. So do they risk trying to get the same type of money? Is there other types of money that they can get that doesn't involve them having to play a role in social behavior? I really think all entertainment companies should get out of the social behavior business and get back to being neutral and centrist and allow politics to take place outside of the sphere of entertainment, because it's ruining the entertainment. It's going to be rough by the end of the year. Are they going to sell any of their big IPs? I say no. It's just like a PR nightmare. You know, Disney sells Star Wars. It's like their stocks tank. And I don't think anybody can like pony up enough dough that even the selling it would be embarrassing as well. And they sold it for less than they bought it for, you know, that kind of thing. And I think they paid more for it than they probably should have, which has been talked about in other spheres. Will perhaps some people in charge get fired? I mean, I hope so. But I think the politicking will prevent anything meaningful from happening on that front, honestly. As it says, prevented swift action against Kathleen Kennedy, who has clearly been destroying the Lucasfilm brand for a while now. So what do I hope happens? I don't know, man. Honestly, I think it's time to burn this effort down. These companies only understand money. And embarrassments like this, they understand this. This is really embarrassing. This does change things. Most of the time, it changes Hollywood in weird ways because Hollywood always learns the wrong lessons and, you know, it gives up instead of changing up. It's like, well, we won't do that anymore. Well, it wasn't working because you sucked at doing it, not because it sucked as an idea to do. But I don't know. I just want to see all this shit come crashing down to the ground. It's simple. It's simple, man. If they fail, they have to start again. I don't believe, everybody's like, Hollywood's crash. I don't believe that Hollywood crashes. I don't believe that movies go away. I really don't believe the doom and gloom. I do believe you need to let the market crash so it actually can find its level. They always do this thing where they save the thing from doing what it's obviously supposed to do naturally. Well, obviously, what's supposed to happen naturally right now is happening throughout Hollywood as we got the writer's strike and everything else going on. And I think it's time for this all to collapse so that it can be remade again more smartly. I think similarly in the comic book industry, I want to see new independent comic book companies rise up to take place of Marvel and DC and start giving us science fiction with brains. Let's get back to ideas. It's like when we made everything about race, all of a sudden we forgot about the ideas and people became their race and their sexuality and their gender instead of being interesting, deep characters. Interesting and deep is first and foremost. Diverse, cool. But that doesn't matter. Like, if you're noticing diverse, you're racist. You're sexist. Like you're not supposed to notice that. They're all just avatars. That movie Avatar, it was really, it's like we go into the thing here. It's a vehicle for me to experience other people's pain, suffering, joy, adventure, all of these things. Seems like a good time to tell you to go sign up for notifications for King of Kings number one, my new comic book that I've done with some of my best buddies. It's a long time in the making. It's really, really awesome. A blasphemous and hysterical battle of the band starring the gods and Jesus Christ himself. It's really a wonderful labor of love. If you've heard me talk about making this stuff, now see me make some of this stuff myself. I will put my money where my mouth is. You will love what me and my cohorts have cooked up. So go to Kickstarter right now and sign up for notifications for King of Kings number one, which should be launching next week. We need your support. We'd be honored if you would help us. Well, I think I've talked about this as much as I need to. It's really cool for those of you listening and the podcast for the first time ever. I have this on YouTube live right now, and people are able to see me, and I'm not seeing myself on the camera, so I don't know, but it's definitely made me a little bit self-conscious, but I think I managed to get through this. I'll leave this here for you. I'm going to try to do more things on YouTube in the future, but I'm a very anti-superficial person, and I liked the fact that nobody was seeing me on the podcast and that I could just talk about things, and it was just about ideas, because ideas are my favorite things. As a thinking man, I like to think about things and make connections. And I think that that's what makes living so wonderful. Doing this on camera, it sets a little bit of a different tone. And I start to like, what, do I have a booger in my nose and things like that? But I wanted to put something on YouTube so that if anybody was out there and they typed in Coolest Geek Alive onto YouTube, they would be able to find something. This might be the only one for a minute, but there will be some things coming back, I promise you. And especially maybe some things with my sweet, cute kids reviewing some of those geek classic movies that I put on that list last week. Anyway, I guess I probably have just barely enough time after I edit this thing down to do today's letter. Well, it's not today's letter. It was supposed to be last week's letter, but I didn't get to it. If you want to write me a letter, hit me up at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com and I'll read it on the air if it's, something cool. From Kirby D. Subject, Trashopolis! ! Hello. I hope this message will be read by Mr. Jesse Blaze Snyder. It is on air on my show. Because I'm asking about his documentary series, Trashopolis. I was inspired to look you up after listening to a recent episode of Coolest Geek Alive and saw that you're the narrator of a favorite documentary series of mine, Trashopolis. Dude, that is a favorite documentary series of mine. I am so honored that I got to be the narrator for Trashopolis because I think that show is dope. If you'd like to think and learn some interesting things, find Trashopolis. I've been trying to find, where the whole series can be watched, but so far have found nowhere. I'd seen two of the episodes a few years ago and took notes for presentations I'm creating on Tokyo and Los Angeles. I think the series is totally awesomely informational and necessary stuff to watch about an important aspect of the environment. Trash. Yeah, man, I totally agree. It's really, really cool. It's even so much more interesting than that because it's about history and like times in history and really gives you a snapshot to what life was like at various times in history just by studying the trash of the various periods in Rome and New York, but like the beginning of these civilizations. It's amazing. I would very much like to know if there's a place where the series can be watched, or better yet, if possible, I'd like to download the episodes or get a DVD of them all, yes, all, for further research on my presentations. How did you get into voiceovers, and are there any other credits you have that might surprise your listeners? Thank you, and have an awesome day, Kirby D. Yeah, honestly, I don't have a good answer for this myself, because I've looked for them. I, you know, had been given copies, lost them along the way. I had a fire a while back, and I lost a lot of my stuff. So I was trying to find them. I found some episodes would come up for free on occasion on the Smithsonian Channel app on my Roku. So the Smithsonian Channel app, I would check it every now and then, and sometimes they would have episodes in preview, but I didn't find anywhere to buy it. It is such a great series, though. It's definitely worth searching for, but I do think the Smithsonian app is the main thing. I worked for Smithsonian Channel as a narrator for, I don't know, like a decade. They had a lot of voices, and I was their young voice, and occasionally I would get, I only did a certain amount of series, you know, maybe like four series for them, or seasons, and Trashopolis was one, and it was my favorite. It was, as he says, so informational. In fact, that's your homework for this week. Everybody, go try to figure out where to watch Trashopolis, and somebody write me at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com. Tell me where people can find it, but I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Go type in Trashopolis and find that series. It's great. Anyway, as far as how I got into voiceovers, I got discovered at a party by an agent that my father knew, who said that he could get me work on TV as a host. I used to have long hair at the time. I was, I'm still in a band. I have a band called Dilf USA, but I had a band at that time called Blazed. And he said, "Can I send you on some auditions?" And I said, "Okay." And I got hired by MTV out of college, MTV2. I was a VJ for a year. I was a VJ on AWOL Music. I did a lot of hosting things for a little while, but because I had a very specific rock and roll look, I felt like, not that I wore out my welcome, but like everybody had seen me. Like if anybody wanted to hire me for more hosting, like I wasn't the new fresh face anymore. And so I decided to switch into voiceovers, because I had gotten really good at reading the scripts. And I heard that the modern voiceover thing of the time was that they wanted somebody who was very conversational. I was really good at talking and making it sound conversational, even if I was reading a script. But anyway, I'll just go through a quick bunch here. You might recognize, "Want more taste? Get America's favorite pizza. Pizza Hut, now online. Pre-order Madden, get good sooner. GameStop, power to the players. Buying a Kia is one smart move. On Food Paradise," or something like that. Yeah, I do lots of voiceovers in all different areas of the business, and it's super fun. So, I just love working in that field and working with my voice. Again, you know, I'm very anti-superficial, so I love being able to use just my voice to communicate as opposed to what I look like. I don't like when that matters. Anyway, thank you for writing me, Kirby D, at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com. Drop me a letter if you got anything to say about anything that I've said, or you want to say, "Hey, Jesse, kudos. I love you, man. I appreciate that. I love you. You are the coolest geeks alive." And I think I did manage to keep this under an hour after I do all my editing, so I'm really excited. And I had this on the live YouTube. I'm going to go say goodbye to them after I say goodbye to you right now. But I love you so much. Happy 4th of July. If you're listening in America, you guys are the best. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Coolest Geek Alive. Please join me next time, because it's going to be freaking awesome. Peace. You've been listening to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe for more excellent geek culture content. Thanks for listening. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Coolest alive. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Stay with your tribe. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Revenge of the Geeks. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Week after weeks. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Laughing with you. It's gonna be freaking awesome. And crying sometimes. Yeah.
It's gonna be freaking awesome. Talking some shit. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Living legit. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Food in our mouth. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Get in our mouth. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Tell all your friends. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Call right on text. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Raising the bar. It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Awesome! Friggin' awesome! It's going to be friggin' awesome! Just wait! You'll see! You'll all see!